with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We are a minute past the hour, a minute past 6 p.m. in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. It's the 26th day of September 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room. Many are already heading that way, and more will be joining them. Good evening, Carol. Good evening, Chugga Punch. Good evening, Waggy. Good evening, longtime veteran chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. And, you know, for what it's worth, I'm there, too. Thank you very kindly, Randy. Loud and clear on iTunes. And thank you for kicking in early on our end-of-September fundraising drive. Let's go ahead and get that out of the way. It'll take a while to get the fundraising drive out of the way, but just let's talk about this for a minute. What it boils down to is we are trying to raise... enough money to meet some unforeseen expenses that were brought about by changes in the technology that brings this program out to you, and winding up business with the less than competent bunch who couldn't deliver the bandwidth, but still managed to figure out a way to deliver the bill, as well as a couple of other pressing bills, and they all add up to an existential crisis for whether the Horn will make it to its ninth online-only birthday, which comes around, by the way, on October the 24th. That's how close we are to being 9 years old, you know, online exclusive. And, of course, we are more than 10 years old now, having passed that mark back in February. So we are. We're trying to raise $2,000 by the end of September, first couple of days of October, and if we can do that, then we can. Well, I can mop a little bit of sweat away, and we'll just keep marching on through October and hope that we get to November. And in November, we'll worry about December. I mean, you see how it works. So I'm very proud to say that of that $2,000 goal, we have managed to raise thus far $675 of it, which is huge, huge. And I thank everyone, each and everyone, who has jumped in there. In order to get the rest of the way, however, we have got a couple of challenges. I got a note from Tom, our buddy out in the Bay Area, who said, "We can't let the Horn wither away. I've especially liked Carol's calls in the last few weeks. Her wish I could remember the 70s, they were so much fun, had me rolling. Good thing I hadn't just taken a drink. Me, I was known as Ozone in my dorm. Long ago and far away. Ozone. Wonder why. So I'm putting 300 smackaroos down, and I'd like to see the family match it today. We'll need more on Monday and Tuesday. Hang in there." So there it is, a $300 challenge on the table from Tom in the Bay Area. And if we can, hopefully we can match that within the 3 hours of this program. There's also a challenge on the table from Lauren in Canada. Lauren said earlier today via email, I'm turning 60 on September 30th, and I would like to donate $60 as a challenge, because I like the challenges on your show, and I crave attention. How do I set up a challenge? And in that question, Lauren set up the challenge. So there are $360 worth of challenges. If you want to respond to one challenge or another specifically, please let me know in a note. But one way or the other, you know, that would go a long way. We'd be well past halfway to where we need to be if we got there, if both Lauren's and Tom's challenges were answered this evening. Thank you both very, very much. Thank you to Jay and to Scott and to Rob. I mentioned earlier, thank you to Randy. These are all absolutely critical means of keeping things going here. Because you know, we joke. There's no George Soros money out there. I mentioned to Carol earlier today on Facebook, you know, I think the right wing worries about George Soros about as much as they worry about gay sex and women's hoo-hoos. In other words, they think about him a lot more than we do. Yeah, no kidding. It is Friday on the Front Porch, and we will fire up the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable in fairly short order. If you have never participated in the Friday on the Front Porch Roundtable, the way you do that is to send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, on Skype. And he will then confirm you into the group. I mean, it's not like there's any baptism or anything, or you have to memorize. You'll just be confirmed, and you'll be brought into the group, and you'll be part of one of the most delightful conversations, I think, that takes place anywhere in radio today, if not the most delightful. When we get the Horn Malloy Skype chat group going righteous, it's a blast. And hopefully tonight will be one of those evenings. Let's see, where to start. Well, I got a couple of ideas, a couple of things that sort of grabbed me. Look. I'm following our getting our war on as best as I possibly can. But I don't, and I object. You know, I've got a right wing friend over on Facebook, someone I've known since I was a child. And twice now he's raised this issue of, you know, where are all the marches in the streets over this war? And he really does, to be fair, oppose this war. As do I. And you know, the fact of the matter is, there were I saw photos. There were people carrying anti-drone signs at the People's Climate March. There were people carrying anti-war signs at the People's Climate March. Because, you know, when you think about it, all the nasty stuff from bomb explosions does go into the air, and it does foul water. You want to know how bad war can be for the environment? Ask the mothers of the malformed babies that were born as a result of having depleted uranium descend upon their world in places like Fallujah. Yeah. You want to know how bad war is? That's a good place to start. But our side is being fairly clear about not wanting war, I think. I don't think we have as clear a governmental voice as we had in Dennis Kucinich. Dennis Kucinich, if you were listening to Malloy last night, Dennis Kucinich has made abundantly clear what a fool's errand this is. Because it is. It's a war against somebody that, once again, we've gotten into a war against somebody that we're not really sure who they are. No idea. I watched today, I watched the press conference with Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel and General Dempsey, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And bless their hearts. Now, look, we have in this country civilian control of the military, at least nominally. The military cannot go to war by itself. And I, honest to God, don't think that the military was sitting there chomping at the bit wanting to go after ISIL. Because it's like trying to grab a handful of snakes. Every time you think you've got a real grasp on it, it's slithered away. Institutional national militaries are good at opposing other institutional national militaries. They're not good at this asymmetrical stuff. And history is replete with moments, transitional moments, when militaries had to adapt or be crushed to be all nerdy and go back into ancient history. There was a battle with the Gauls during the time of the Roman Republic, when the Romans marched up there with their javelins and their shields and everything, and the first thing you did was you got within range and you flung your javelins and tried to knock a few of the opponent out, and then you marched in with your short swords and your shields and you began the act of personal butchery. There's only one problem. At this particular battle, the Gauls who were having the javelins thrown at them figured out that a javelin laying on the ground, or in fact stuck in one's next-door neighbor, was equally effective being thrown back. This they did, and put a whoop-ass on the Army of the Republic that, well, it didn't go over real well back home. This led to some changes in tactics. For instance, a redesign of the pilum, which is what you call that javelin, that would snap at once under any circumstance. Once it was thrown, and it snapped right, and so with the iron head snapped off, there wasn't much you could do with it. That's technological. As I said, I watched the news conference, and buried in there were some really, really disturbing admissions. One of which was that they keep talking about a force of 5,000 local free Syrian militia loyalist, our buddy types who are going to do the dirty business on the ground. And it is dirty, bloody business no matter whose side you are on. But upon further review, as the referees say, it turns out it's really going to be more like 15 or 20 or 30, who knows, 1,000 soldiers who do not exist at this point in time. And who may not exist. I can't see the beloved darlings of our foreign policy, the Saudis, marching their shiny military off to fight ISIL. One, because they probably wouldn't be too welcome to march across Iraq. Can't see it happen with the Qataris either, or the UAE. I mean, they got tiny nations, relatively speaking. And you take all those countries together and try to figure out who's going to lead? That's going to be a hard waltz. Everybody wants to lead. This is the nature of the problem. But even more disturbing coming out of that press conference was a little, and, you know, I mean, there was a pretty decent back and forth of questions. At one point in time, there was an affirmative answer to a question of, if some of our allies on the ground get in trouble, will the United States help them? And I'm pretty sure I heard the answer come, yes. Because I remember feeling the little hairs standing up on the back of my neck, because that felt like an awful lot like a guarantee that we are going to wind up in a ground war there again. And of course, they're channeling a little bit of Shakespeare along, or not Shakespeare, Churchill along the way too, because on more than one occasion this afternoon, the statement was made that this is going to be a long campaign, and I heard in the back of my own mind, if it wasn't actually said, this is not the beginning of the end. This is the end of the beginning. Churchill. And then the conversation shifted outside the press briefing to being one of, well, this is going to be a battle that is going to be consuming the remainder of Barack Obama's presidency. Newsflash. Barack Obama's presidency will officially end on January the 20th, 2017. So what we have essentially been told is we have just entered into a war that is going to last more than 2 years and 3 months. We were also told that we are spending on the order of $10 million per day doing this. And that makes me crazy. It does. Because you cannot help but ask the question, $10 million a day for what? And what are the answers? Now, I am not deliberately trying to set up a straw man here. I am trying to figure out what the answer to that question is. Is the answer to why are we spending $10 million a day bombing Syria and Iraq, is the answer to that to keep ISIL from pouring across the dry riverbed of the Rio Grande between Texas and Mexico down in Midland County, Texas? Is that the answer? Is the answer to keep ISIL from getting on airplanes and a-flying over here and flying them into buildings? Is that the answer? Because you would think if that was the answer, that would be an enunciated answer. I'm not going to sit still for we have to fight them over there so we won't have to fight them over here. No, saw that movie. Sucked. But it seems like where we're headed. We've done gotten ourselves sucked into a war that we were deliberately sucked into by some really nasty PR of some beheadings. Oh, and we're all excited today, and I know we've got some listeners in the UK, and golly, y'all must be too. Hard on the heels of Scotland deciding better together. How's that working out? The UK just decided to get their war on with us. And, of course, the French are involved. Isn't it funny how new problems have a way of looking like old problems based upon the people who get together to solve them? Yeah, we got our... I'm going to say this, and I'm going to hate myself for it, but I heard France, the United States, and Great Britain, the United Kingdom, and I thought, well, here it is, 2014, and we certainly are shouldering our fair share of the white man's burden, aren't we? Because we are. Three imperial nations, perhaps yearning for the more glorious days of empire, marching off to enforce its will on a portion of the world where it has no business, and damned little likelihood of success. A great deal of time was also spent today discussing how much care the United States military takes to make sure that we, and this was the word, minimize, and the next phrase, collateral damage. And then, as if realizing that collateral damage is really, really cold, sterile, and Orwellian, General Dempsey followed up by saying, you know, civilian casualties. So we have now been reassured that the highest levels of the American military, we try really hard not to kill three-year-olds in their bed with our bombs. We do. We try really hard. Try really hard not to kill newlyweds in their beds with our Tomahawk cruise missiles. Of course, I seem to recall over the last 13, 12 years or so, us trying really hard not to blow the bejesus out of wedding parties in Afghanistan with our Hellfire cruise missiles. How'd that work out? Not so well if you were attending the wedding. Now, if you were the pimply-faced Air Force kid with the joystick for 8,000 miles away going, fire, cool, I guess it worked out okay. But that is, it is gag-inducing to hear that kind of thing. And then this. And, of course, we're sure that somewhere along the way, ISIL put out some propaganda claiming that we've killed some civilians. What if it's not propaganda? What if, being as they're the ones on the ground, what if they're the ones who get to the rubble first and watch Daddy pulling his three-year-old out of said rubble? Is that propaganda? Well, I guess it is, because it's meant to, but you know what? It can also be reality. I'm not defending the headloppers. I think they're a bunch of freaks who learned their craft from a bunch of freaks through history, many of whom were us. And then probably the most truthful, if depressing, statement. Of course we always try to minimize civilian casualties, but we know that that can never be reduced to zero. You know, because if you're going to make an omelet, you got to splatter some mommies. And yeah, Carol just noted something in the chat room that I think is probably worth talking about. The FBI has themselves a new investigation going. There's a plant out in Oklahoma. It distributes groceries. And a 30-year-old by the name of Alton Nolan got fired from the plant. But he came back, drove back in his automobile, rammed another vehicle, and went in and apparently had stolen a knife inside the plant and repeatedly stabbed 54-year-old Colleen Hufford. He attacked two of his former co-workers. 43-year-old Tracy Johnson was the other. By that point in time, however, Mark Vaughn, an Oklahoma County Reserve Deputy, and former CEO of Vaughn Foods, shot 30-year-old Alton Nolan. This was all in Moore, Oklahoma. Naturally, according to KFOR-TV, co-workers were there to declare that Alton Nolan had recently converted to Islam and had been trying to convert some of the people he worked with. Here's why. After he had murdered 54-year-old Colleen Hufford, he cut her head off. Ooh, the head loppers is here. Run for the hills. Somebody tell Lindsey Graham to head to the panic room. Now, if this had happened at any time other than the current ISIL hysteria, we would just be talking about this as another godforsaken crime in a country that is swimming in it. Note that Alton Nolan cut her head off after he killed her. Or, well, I don't know, maybe she was still alive. Oklahoma County Reserve Deputy, former CEO of Vaughn Foods, Mark Vaughn, is described as a hero, with Sergeant Jeremy Lewis saying it could have gotten a lot worse. Now the FBI is on the case to determine whether or not Alton Nolan was a head-lopping ISIL. Mm-hmm. If he was, I don't think he'd had enough time for his certificate suitable for framing to arrive. But we're going to be up to our eyeballs in this, so, you know, get whatever it takes to get you through the night and have it handy. 'Cause, oh my Lord. Now, of course, it's not like we needed this to get the ball rolling. You may recall a couple of weeks ago that Dr. Ben Carson, I wouldn't go to this guy for a mosquito bite. You may recall that he declared that Barack Obama won't attack ISIL because he doesn't want to upset his brother and sister Muslims. Jackass. But as I mentioned yesterday evening, the Values Voters Summit, you know, that really should be accompanied by just the bare mention of the Values Voters Summit should be mentioned. The mention should be accompanied by this. Yeah, that's the Moran Monday music. That's the Calliope music. But sometimes it comes in handy other ways. Because apparently there at the Value Voters Summit, apparently the way that they define values is by how many people who aren't the right color get bombed. Now, there's people who aren't at the Values Voters Summit. Chris Christie's not there. I don't think Snot Walker's there. I think Snot Walker's not there. But by God, 1L Michelle Bachman is. And she's upset. And she's real upset. You know how she gets screechy?
Well, Mr. Obama and Mrs. Clinton, we want our 1980s foreign policy back. Peace through strength. Peace through strength. We don't want your failed Russian reset. We don't want four Americans dead in Benghazi. Nothing will change the world more than your foolish lifting of sanctions on Iran as they're racing to complete nuclear weapons, and they will, if you stay the course. Unbelievably, we have the first anti-Israel president in American history. That's your legacy. It's no wonder Hillary Clinton couldn't think of an answer when asked on her book tour to name her greatest accomplishment as Secretary of State. Well, I have one. Permanent retirement. Quite simply because she basically fails to inspire confidence in just about anything. And don't forget, she'll be Barack Obama's third and fourth term as president.
Really? What? Is he? Oh, my God. We're going. She explained that ISIL is engaged in Islamic spiritual warfare.
What we must do to defeat Islamic Jihad, our president has the wrong prescription. He even fails to acknowledge their motivations for bringing out jihad. Yes, Mr. President, it is about Islam. And I believe if you have an evil of an order of this magnitude, you take it seriously. You declare war on it. You don't dance around it. Just like the Islamic State has declared war on the United States of America. You kill their leader. You kill their councils. You kill their army until they wave the white flag of surrender. That's how you win a war.
Oh, God. You want to know why we're heading back into the quagmire? Dare and many like her is why we're heading back into the quagmire. That dangerous, demented, if I believed in demons, I would say demon-possessed woman wants a genocidal war against 1.8 billion human beings. She wants a crusade. She wants it to be us against the Muslims. Apparently she thinks, and you know this is true, she thinks that us doesn't include Muslims. Hey, Michelle, you can't make Muslim without U.S. Oh, don't tempt me, Asa, don't tempt me. Asa says, I'd pay $39.95 pay-per-view kind of money to hear you report live from the Values Voters Summit, Bob. I kid you not. That's just not nice. You would wish that on. Do you have any idea what would happen to my brain after just the first 2 or 3 hours of that insanity? I'd be tearing my clothes off and running naked around the room. Oh, you'd pay $50 for that. No, you wouldn't. It's the horror. The horror. I mean, I'd have to go to some D.C. watering hole and just lean over backwards and start pouring. Just rent a space under a tap. Jesus. And thank you to James and Leo. We have a start on Tom's challenge. We are $35 down the road. You realize that meeting Tom's and Lauren's challenge is just 36 folks at 10 bucks a piece. Just 36. And it would sure go a long way of getting out of this jam. So Michelle 1L Bachman wants to start a world war with Muslims. She's not kidding. Can you imagine what would happen to civil liberties in this country if we got ourselves into a war like that? Now, here's an example, and I seldom play anything from the dipshit of Denali. But here's an example of the cognitive dissonance that's on display at the values voters' side. On the one hand, 1L Michelle wants to wage war against 1.8 billion Muslims. Okay. Then there's the Yahoo of the Yukon, Sarah Palin, who declares that Christians, the Yahoo of the Yukon, the Denali dipshit, I guess we should add, is there an Alaska word that starts with B that we could put to brawler? The Bering Sea brawler. There we go. You know, get out there hollering, "Do you know who we are?" When her drunked up clan on Tide's 50th birthday decides to go. Well, who was it? Track or trigonometry or whatever decided to go and hit on other drunk Alaska guys' wives. You know who we are? Okay, so she's a Christian. She declared at the Values Voters Summit that Christians are the most slandered group in America today. And then this. You don't retreat. You reload the truth, which I know is an endangered species at 1400 Pennsylvania Avenue. Anyway, truth. Oh, and we wanted her to be able to, Jesus, people wanted her to maybe be able to live there. Of course, if she'd lived at 1400 Pennsylvania Avenue, she would have been in the Willard Hotel. Anyway, truth. Thank you, Jack. Jack just raised the amount, funding amount, the matching amount to $65. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. This is how that happens. This is how we keep this on the air. Other stuff. Lots of other stuff. And, I mean, if I have an idea of how something should work out or a better way to do something, I generally will share that. But honest to God, I don't know. Is there a better way for us to get involved in a war against a shadowy army that barely exists? I mean, that won't come out into the field and fight in open daylight and, you know, oppose us with Napoleonic tactics. I don't think there's a better way. Not only is there not a better way, there's not a good way. Not only is there not a better way or a good way, there's not a right way. We've been suckered again. We've been sucked back in to that hot, sandy meat grinder. Because why? Because we just couldn't resist? Got a note here from Ron in Raleigh. When was the last time, Ron asks, why do the Saudis buy all that shiny military equipment when they have no intention of fighting with it? The last time the Saudis had a cross-border excursion, and the only time in the history of the kingdom, was against the Houthi rebels in Yemen in 2009. With the Saudis and the Israelis as our allies, what could go wrong? With the sheikhs and the emirs laying back in their tents, drinking coffee and smoking the hookah, we'll be doing all the fighting. That's the plan, Ron. Because we're expendable infidels. And they're sacred and stuff. If you have the ability to do so, I highly recommend that you go back and listen to last night's Malloy program. And listen to his detailed explanation of an article describing what is referred to as the 28 pages. We really are, for all we have done for them, held in the deepest disdain by our head-lopping Saudi allies. They despise us. They loathe us. They tolerate us because we sell them shiny weapons in exchange for oil. But the thing is, Ron, if they use those shiny weapons, they won't be shiny anymore. Anybody remember the classic MASH episode where the 4077th was trying to requisition an autoclave, or was it an incubator? It was an incubator. It was an incubator, so that they could test for their own instead of having to send it out to a lab. And the supply clerk was this corrupt dude who was sending a jeep back, a tank back home, you know, one piece at a time. And he said, I can get you a pizza. He said, I can get you a pizza oven. You go to that, you mark the box called mortar, and you scratch out mortar and you write pizza oven. But I've only got two incubators, and if I give you one incubator, then I'll only have one incubator. I won't have two. See, you can't have an incubator. Well, it's kind of like that. If the Saudis take out their shiny military and start using it, they won't have a shiny military anymore. And who knows, but about, half or more of that shiny military might decide to go rouge. Thank you, Sarah Palin. Once they get out on the dusty trail. And the next thing you know, because they share a religious affinity, next thing you know, half of the Saudi military could become a big force multiplier to ISIL. And the same with a whole bunch of other militaries. Oh, by the way, look up the picture of the Saudi ambassador. No, not the Saudi, the Iraqi ambassador. People of a certain age will remember Get Smart. Remember Maxwell Smart in 99? And remember Maxwell Smart's boss? I saw a photograph last night of the Iraqi ambassador And I'm pretty sure he's the son of the guy who played Maxwell Smart's boss on Get Smart. It was eerie. Thank you very kindly, Asa. Asa has pushed us up over the one-third mark in answering Tom's challenge. We are at $115 now. Thank you very kindly. So that just means another $185, and Tom's challenge has been fulfilled. I, honest to God, where's the answer? Where is any answer? And I will certainly put this to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group for our Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Is there, and I'm really not trying to guide this question. If there's a right answer that isn't what I'm suggesting, I want to know. But I would like it to be backed with some logic and common sense. Is there any right answer to this except don't do it? Now, also speaking at the voters' values, voters, I can't keep it. That bunch of knuckle walking, snake handling, floor rollers, tongue speakers that are gathered in Washington. Also speaking there was Runt Paul, libertarian, self-certified libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head. He spoke there. And he's all mad at President Obama because we're involved in a war, and that one didn't come to Congress to get a declaration of war. But of course, Runt Paul seems to forget that the Congress doesn't want anything to do with discussing that one's war. You might note, for instance, that in a quote talking about what Congress's role in this should be, John Boehner, in between great big swigs through the swirly straw of cheap screw-top Merlot, said, "I look forward to debating this in the new Congress." That would be the Congress that will convene on what, January the 3rd, 2015. And what's interesting is if I read the news accounts correctly, this latest authorization for what we're doing over there, whatever that actually is, besides flying around and tomahawking and droning and whatnot, it expires on December the 11th. So between December the 11th and January 3rd, it's going to be a sort of legal no man's land. But the funniest part is the part where Runt Paul prefaced his remarks by saying, "And if I was president," why is it that I can, because he's used that phrase a couple of times now, and it's always come back to bite him. Why is it that every time I hear Runt Paul and that thing on his head say, "If I was president," I hear Bert Lahr as the Cowardly Lion singing, "If I was the king of the forest"? Eesh. And, of course, also, by the way, Carol informs me that she refers to Sarah Palin as the Tundra Twunt. She also delivered the latte salute today at the Values Center. It is a right-wing red meat festival. Oddly enough, she did not follow up by giving the Scottish Terrier salute. You know, the one where you point Barney at the camera with your little head bent over like, you know, John Hurt playing the Elephant Man and sort of point at your head. Oh, okay, thank you. Robert just reminded me. Go ahead, Bob, share the link so that everybody can enjoy the Value Voters Summit merriment over the weekend. Yes, it's there if you want to give them the web traffic. Values Voter Summit. .org. And they'll be a pontificating, a vilificating, and complaining about Kenyan Muslim usurpation and deep-seated hatred of white people and anti-colonialism. And see, I think we're going to have to retire anti-colonialism, because we're engaged in some serious old-fashioned colonialism in what we're doing here. France has finally been persuaded to begin bombing inside Syria. And I don't make French jokes. I love the French. One wonders how we would handle having another nation pour across. Oh, never mind. But France probably did not feel too good about participating in the bombing of Syria, because Syria was that portion of the Middle East that was awarded to France as a result of the partition following the First World War. Syria and what is now Lebanon went to France, and Britain got Palestine and everything else. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes you just have to shoulder that colonial burden. Tell you what, before we start the Friday on the Front Porch conversation, let's go to the phone. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Oh, they quit. Gotta stay on hold for longer than 15 seconds. Steve noting, Values Voter Summit, I prefer Booger Eater Convention. Well, there will be a little snacking going on. Thank you, Sal. We are almost halfway to meeting Tom's challenge. We're at $125. Thank you very, very much. Thomas just took us to $135. It helps a lot, Thomas. Thank you very kindly. So we are $165 away from meeting Tom's Not Let the Horn Wither and Die challenge, which can be a real game changer. By the way, just a reminder, Sparky is pulling together the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable for Friday on the Front Porch. If you want in and you've never sent a contact request, send it to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc on Skype, and you'll be part of the conversation. Oh, see, okay, Robert clearing things up for me. Yeah, the president wasn't drinking a latte. I heard it was actually a chai tea, so all the more reason to hate him, right? By the way, says Robert, I love chai. I like it, too. That spicy wonderfulness mixed with oddly enough, if you can, of all the places where you can imagine one would spring up, and this ain't one of them, we have a lovely little Thai restaurant about, 3 miles from where I am right now. And it's not like a huge menu place. It's you walk in and, the proprietor, who is a magnificent cook, she's always got pad thai. And she's always got one of the classic Thai soups. And she's always got, you know, some sort of other entree. I went in one day and there was this pumpkin curry that just blew my mind. And it's all for like $5 or so. Kind of cafeteria stuff. But she always has that, what do they call it? It's like stretched tea or something. And it's a spiced tea that's sweetened with like Eagle brand milk over ice. And oh, it's a delight. Oh, wonderful. By the way, Carol with a suggestion. And it's a good one. If you want to participate in this fundraising challenge, Carol encourages you to do what she did, and that is to post the contribution link, you know, headonradionetwork.com/contribute. Post that on your social media pages. She says, that's how I got us some money today, even though I'm broke. And she did, and we are deeply grateful. It'll be nice to start October and start October. So, yeah, if you'd be so kind as to share it around, share the contribute link on your Facebook, your Twitter, whatnot. Makes a big difference. Thanks, Ryan. Ryan has just taken us to the halfway point. We now only have $150 to go to meet Tom's challenge. This takes a humongous amount of stress out of my world, and out of y'all's too, because I know people worry. You know, Kate was the first one ever to say, you know, one of these days we'll all tune in, and it'll just be beep. We won't even be able to afford that. But this is how we keep that from happening. Hey, that's true, true. Frank pointed out that Saudi women can vote. And a graphic here of what looks to be a Renault smart car under a burqa. Saudi Arabia is now allowing women to drive. Oh, such an enlightened bunch. Well, here we are at the top of the hour. And I think we would do well. I don't want to. I damn near filibobstered the whole program away last night. And I don't want to do that again. So, by all means, let's take a little break. 15 more folks at $10 a piece, and all the other mathematical permutations, and we finish off Tom's challenge, and that gets us well over halfway toward closing the fundraising gap for the end of September and the beginning of October. And there's no overestimating the importance of that. I just love this song. You guys have heard it a few times. I'd like to hear it again. I hope you don't mind. Because the lyric just, you know, it perfectly expresses the foreign affairs answer for why we are in the mess we're in. It all goes back to old 1919, 1920. Yeah. This is Conversation Radio, Friday on the Front Porch, getting ready to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The map of Europe spread out in a hall at my side. Every single nationality and principality have come for a piece of the pie. I'm sitting in the wreck of Europe with the map of Europe, and the lines and the borders are gone. Gotta do this jigsaw puzzle, it's an awful model, but somehow we gotta go on. Lawrence of Arabia is waiting in the wings. He's got some Arab sheikhs and kings.
Lawrence of Arabia has got this perfect vision. Gonna sell him down the river. There's no time for him now. I'm gonna take a piece of Russia and a piece of Germany and give them to Poland again. I'll put together Yugoslavia and Czechoslovakia and hope that is how they'll remain. Then I'll take a bit of Turkey, then a lot of Turkey. This is all quite a heady affair. There's pressure on Iraq to pick up and there's Churchill's hiccup and we can't leave it up in the air. Woodrow Wilson waves his 14 points around and says the time to act is now and get this opportunity again. Woodrow Wilson has his 14 points but Clemenceau turns to Lloyd George and says you know that God himself had only 10. By a league of notions, by a league of notions, I don't think I quite understand. I only know from this commotion there's a chance that we can turn the world in the palm of our hands. I'm carried by a league of notions, by a league of notions, I don't think I quite understand. I only know from this commotion there's a chance that we can turn the world in the palm of our hands.
Stunningly appropriate and historical lyric, you get that amazing guitar. Yeah, League of Notions from Between the Wars, a 1995 album by, you know, one of my musical favorites, Al Stewart. And, you know, there's reference in there. It's time for the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable of Friday on the Front Porch. And going into that, just a couple of things. One, if you wanted to set the Wayback Machine and go and maybe keep a lot of the, well, I don't know if you'd keep the problems from happening, but you could change things for the better, I think, if you could borrow one of those ISIL head-lopping swords and set the Wayback Machine for then and go back and explain to David Lloyd George and Georges Clemenceau that maybe Wilson's 14 points made a little bit of sense. Oh, but by God, they were going to get their pound of flesh out of Germany. How'd that work out, boys? Did Georges Clemenceau live to see 1939? I don't think so. But just out of curiosity, you know, because they really did. They mocked Wilson's 14 points. And for anybody who is interested, here are Wilson's 14 points. Open covenants of peace. That's number one. Open covenants of peace, openly arrived at, after which there shall be no private international understandings of any kind, but diplomacy shall proceed always frankly and in the public view. Two, absolute freedom of navigation upon the seas, outside territorial waters, alike in peace and in war, except as the seas may be closed in whole or in part by international action for the enforcement of international covenants. The removal of all economic barriers and the establishment of equality of trade conditions among all the nations consenting to the peace and associating themselves for its maintenance. Adequate guarantees given and taken that national armaments will be reduced to the lowest point consistent with domestic safety. A free, open-minded, and absolutely impartial adjustment of all colonial claims based upon a strict observance of the principle that in determining all such questions of sovereignty, the interests of the populations concerned must have equal weight with the equitable claims of the government whose title is to be determined. As to colonialism, that's pretty. I'm sure that's one of the ones that stuck in the boys' craws at the time. The evacuation of all Russian territory and such a settlement of all questions affecting Russia as well as will secure the best and freest cooperation of the other nations of the world in obtaining for her an unhampered and unembarrassed opportunity for the independent determination of her own political development and national policy, and assure her of a sincere welcome into the society of free nations under institutions of her own choosing, and more than a welcome, assistance also of every kind that she may need and may herself desire. The treatment accorded Russia by her sister nations in the months to come will be the acid test of their goodwill, of their comprehension of her needs as distinguished from their own interests, and of their intelligent and unselfish sympathy. Belgium, the whole world will agree, must be evacuated and restored, without any attempt to limit the sovereignty which she enjoys in common with all other free nations. No other single act will serve as this will serve to restore confidence among the nations in the laws which they have themselves set and determined for the government of their relations with one another. Without this healing act, the whole structure and validity of international law is forever impaired. All French territory should be freed and the invaded portions restored, and the wrong done to France by Prussia in 1871 in the matter of Alsace-Lorraine, which has unsettled the peace of the world for nearly 50 years, should be righted in order that peace may once more be made secure in the interest of all. 9. A readjustment of the frontiers of Italy should be effected along clearly recognizable lines of nationality. The people of Austria-Hungary, 10, whose place among the nations we wish to see safeguarded and assured, should be accorded the freest possible opportunity, the freest opportunity to autonomous development. Romania, Serbia, and Montenegro should be evacuated, occupied territories restored, Serbia accorded free and secure access to the sea, and the relations of the several Balkan states to one another determined by friendly counsel along historically established lines of allegiance and nationality, and international guarantees of the political and economic independence and territorial integrity of the several Balkan states should be entered into. 12. The Turkish portion of the present Ottoman Empire should be assured a secure sovereignty, but the other nationalities which are now under Turkish rule should be assured an undoubted security of life and an absolutely unmolested opportunity of autonomous development, and the Dardanelles should be permanently opened as a free passage to the ships and commerce of all nations under international guarantees. An independent Polish state should be erected, which should include the territories inhabited by indisputably Polish populations, which should be assured a free and secure access to the sea, and whose political and economic independence and territorial integrity should be guaranteed by international covenant. And 14th, a general association of nations must be formed under specific covenants for the purpose of affording mutual guarantees of political independence and territorial integrity to great and small states alike. Those are the 14 points that Georges Clemenceau and David Lloyd George mocked. And it was that 14th point, out of which grew the League of Nations, that upon returning to the United States, having negotiated some of this, Woodrow Wilson presented to the Senate of the United States, the League of Nations, for ratification, and a man named Henry Cabot Lodge, a senator, torpedoed the whole thing. And you can make a compelling argument that any one American politician should be dug up and have his body dumped into the Potomac or wherever the hell he's buried. Henry Cabot Lodge is that man. Because out of the United States' refusal to enter into the League of Nations, you get a League of Nations that became wholly ineffective, and you get September 1939, and you get everything that flows from it to this day. And that 12th point about Turkey, did you notice that line? The other nationalities which are now under Turkish rule should be assured an undoubted security of life and an absolutely unmolested opportunity of autonomous development. That's the entire Middle East. Instead, we get the Balfour Declaration and the partition of the Middle East among the British and the French. And hey, welcome to 2014! So I did not intend that as a filibuster, but I just wanted to put that, provide a little perspective on, you know, the long view. Let's go to the Friday on the Front Porch Horn Malloy Skype chat group and the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob. Sergey must have some problems with connection problems, so I'm sure he'll jump back in. And Saul said he wanted in, but I can't get him in. He's not answering.
I'll be darned. What happened to Carol?
I'm right here.
She's
right
there.
Oh, okay, okay. Yes, you're the lightning bolt. Okay. and somehow it makes sense, you know?
Todd and Kathy are the food porn.
Yeah, Todd and Kath are the grill food porn. And
Wagon. We're here. And hello.
Hey, Kath. Hey, Todd.
Boom.
Hi, Bob.
Boom,
boom.
And Waggy is his usual black cat self.
Yes, indeedy. It's the rain.
Hey, Wags. Hey, Carol.
Hey.
Everybody else.
So I'll just ask: have we got enough to play with on the out of the filibuster, or do we need more?
Oh, we got it.
Oh, I don't remember all those points, but I remember the partitioning and the trouble that it caused.
Is there going to be a quiz on it? That's my only concern.
Friday, next Friday.
I'm just saying the beat goes on.
The quiz will be on Monday.
I was told to do no math.
No. The quiz is Friday, Waggy, because otherwise people blow off class on Friday.
Essay or multiple choice?
I know I was doing a little homework while you were talking about the Saudi shiny military. Being in the Air Force, I had to check out the Air Force. They got a lot of stuff.
Oh yes, they do. And it's really and it's pretty much top shelf.
Yeah, but I remember they did shoot down one Iraqi jet during the Desert Storm, the first Gulf War, with an F-15 against an Iraqi jet before they all skedaddled to Iran.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, question coming in from our buddy Luda on Woodrow Wilson. Bob, did he say all those 14 points things before or after he imprisoned thousands for criticizing the government? That's after. Hypocrisy, you know, we've never shied, in this country, Luda, we have never shied away from hypocrisy. But, yeah. Oh, and thank you, Todd and Kath. Thank you really kindly. Thank you for kicking in.
You are very welcome, Bob.
So now we are over the we're over the hump and on our way to hopefully fulfilling Tom's not wither away. Let's call it Tom's ozone challenge because he said his and did you catch that, Carol? You really tickled Tom's fancy with your "I wish I could remember my college days" remark. Tom pointed out that his nickname in the freshman dorm was Ozone.
I am betting that the 70s were probably a lot of fun. They must have been because I can't remember them.
Exactly. We're halfway to done with Tom's Ozone Challenge.
Commander Quaalude thanks you. Oh, and before I forget, I have to give a shout-out to my big sister, Barbie, who's listening from beautiful downtown LaPorte City, Iowa. She is my older sister, technologically challenged, and I got her all set up on how to get in and listen in. So I promised her I would say hello.
Oh, well, let's all say hello.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hello.
Hi, Barbie.
Hello.
She's sitting in her house laughing like a hyena right now. I promise you, that was wonderful, you guys.
Well, you know, we like you, Carol, we're givers.
Yes, you are.
But in all seriousness, just to go back to my question, is there a right way? Because I don't want to just get stuff wrong. Is there a right way to do this ISIL thing? Is what we're doing the right way? I'm open to the discussion.
No, I don't think what we're doing is the right way, because while I will grant you that we had a big hand in creating the mess, there have been an awful lot of people sitting over there letting this go on unchecked. They're perfectly content to let us come in and clean up their mess. Congress is perfectly content while they're alternately suing the president for overreach, making him do this on his own. I would stop the drone strikes. I would recall every single service person. I would stop absolutely everything. And let's see how fast they get their asses back to Washington for a vote. It won't wait until the next Congress.
No, and I have to agree with Carol. I don't know if it was you, Bob, or somebody who had called in but made the reference to war games.
Yeah.
And, the only choice is not to play. How about a nice game of checkers?
Hello.
And there's Steve.
From Canada.
Yes, indeed. Canada is in the house.
That's right.
Let's see. Y'all are coalition partners in this mess, too, now, aren't you?
Yeah, I feel for our pilots if they go over there. Jesus, if you crash, you're going to get beheaded.
Well, that and, you know, no poutine.
Well, maybe they'll take a Tim Hortons over there.
Oh, God.
Then again, if you work for a, you know, is it a food processing plant, you may end up getting beheaded also. So, you know, take your choices either way you go.
The Canadians had a hockey rink in Afghanistan.
Yep. Oh, we even got Americans to join in and play.
Did you have to teach them first?
They weren't too bad at it.
It was roller hockey, but it was hockey.
If we're going to send Canadians, then I think we have to start with Rafael Eduardo Cruz.
There is a lovely idea.
I agree.
Oh, jeez.
We can have him.
He
was cracking wise at the Values Voters Summit today, too.
What did I miss with him, if I may ask?
He was sitting and he was all proud of himself. He told the assembled mouth breathing, knuckle walking, strychnine swigging, floor rolling, tongue speaking snake jugglers. He told them that his 5-year-old was real proud of him and said, "Dad, that's real cool," about how he read his butchered up green eggs and ham, and they applauded wildly. Of course, the booger eaters did. But then he said, "I don't know if you guys follow the news." Like he's, you know, trying to work his way into some sort of, oh, I don't know, old Carson shtick. But,
well, I think it's a safe assumption that they don't.
But the Secret Service caught a man trying to climb the fence of the White House. And everybody went, ooh, and they clapped. And he said, but then the Secret Service said, "No, Mr. President, you've got 2 more years. Oh, and the room just erupted in burbless, low IQ hooting and hollering.
Yuck, 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 yuck.
Wah, wah, wah.
You mean he couldn't somehow twist the Quickie Mart gasoline shooting of the black man again into Obama from the news? I'm kind of shocked at that he went with the White House break-in. I'm really surprised.
Well, you know, you make your choices in comedy, Todd.
I guess. I just think it's, you know, you got to give him a low score for effort on that. He somehow should have been able to turn that around.
Well, I give him a low score for human being.
Yeah. Got me on that one.
I mean, you just see him on your camera and those ratty, beady little eyes of his, and you can see the wheels turning, thinking, you know, again, if he was president, I mean, wow. You want to talk about people getting rounded up. You know, for the...
Joseph McCarthy. Have you seen the pictures of them side by side?
Oh, you could superimpose them.
Scary.
Yeah, it's terrifying. All you know, these 6 years that the birthers and the deathers and the baggers and the tenthers and the booger eaters and birchers and libertarians and pig lickings have been waiting to get carried off to the FEMA re-education camps. Well, that's a dude that has re-education camp in his eyes. And, I mean, so far, I know we've got the 2014 midterms to worry about, and I hope that they're not the disaster that has been portended. But the 2016 Republican contest is shaping up to be just, this may be the best reality TV that America has ever produced.
I think Jeb Bush will be your next president, unfortunately.
No, he won't.
You don't think so? Sure. I'd rather have him than Hillary.
Ew. Steve, what are you on?
Cheap pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, put down the cheap cough syrup, Steve.
You got old.
For as much as, you know, a corporatist, you know, for all intents and purposes, right-winger that Hillary is, Jeb Bush would be much, much worse. Now, come on now.
He can speak English, unlike his brother.
Oh, that's a low bar. No, but, I mean, think about it.
He
can
stand upright without his knuckles scraping the ground.
And he hasn't subjected us yet to any paintings of his feet from the oh my god. But seriously, I mean, think about what the 2016 field is shaping up to be. You got Rand Paul and that thing on his head. You got Ted Cruz. You've got the renewed ambitions of Chris Christie.
Jeez.
If you want to understand Obama, read Mein Kampf, Ben Carson. Yeah, see, Ben Carson just fills me. I mean, I think he will completely eclipse. He'll completely eclipse Herman Cain, and nobody will even remember Herb. Remember Sarah Palin?
Oh,
called
darn!
Him, remember Sarah Palin called him Herb.
999.
Yeah, there we go.
Did you see that YouTube video with Mike Tyson as Kane?
No.
That was you have to watch that. That is hilarious. Where he said, "My pizza's so awful, my kids won't eat it," or something.
And let's not forget Jimmy Dick Perry.
Oh, good grief! Yeah.
Oh, you weren't. Ugh, hey, Lord. You weren't listening last night, were you, Sergio?
I listened to about half of the show, the first half.
Because did you hear about the energy summit taking place in Houston when I shared that?
Yes, I did. I do remember you actually mentioned me by name, and yes, I completely obliterated a hockey puck. That was crazy.
I mean, that was. I figured that was enough to put you off your donut burgers.
Oh, Lord. Anyway, but...
Not going to let you live that down, Sergi. Sorry, it ain't going to happen.
Oh, yeah, I can just imagine, you know, the New Year's 2020, and y'all still making this celebratory donut burger. But anyway, the thing I wanted to mention about Herman Cain is that I forget which... Right. It was a local, like, FM radio station here. You know, the ones with the wacky morning show hosts. I can't do the voice like you, but,
hey!
And they, did, it was actually very, very, very funny. It's like, what was her name? Amy Winehouse with that song about going to rehab. Except that this version was, I tried to get the nomination. They said 999.
Oh, my God. I do. I think it's going to be an absolutely delightful chase. And remember, see, here's the bonus. The midterms are in November. Most of the clown cars will be sputtering down Main Street by February, March at the latest.
They already are, really.
I mean, right. The advanced shock troops have already descended upon Iowa. Poor Iowa. Do you grieve for your native state, Carol?
For many reasons, Steve King being just one of them.
Steve Cantaloupe King.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, and Robert in Morgantown reminds me, there's always the possibility of Mike Huckstery and Rick Santorum's out there. I mean, the weeds are fairly slithering.
I've been pretty upset ever since I got banned from Mike Huckstery's Facebook page.
They banned you? You? Sweet you?
Yes. He posted this big, long rant. And then at the very end, he wrote, "Jesus wept," and I wrote, "It's okay, Mike, I cry at weddings, too." And I got banned for that.
Well, that's a hair trigger, isn't it?
Carol, take that as a badge of honor. I mean, me, I've been banned from our local, Fox affiliate here in North Texas is Channel 4. I've been banned from their Facebook page thrice. Three times.
Oh, okay, this is a little bit off, aside, but since we had do I understand correctly that the headlopper in Oklahoma got killed in the exchange?
I don't believe so. I think he was injured, but they're waiting for him to regain consciousness before they charge him.
Well,
that is the last thing that I heard news-wise.
Okay, well, it makes a difference because there's a guy, and you can't make this up. At least I hope you can't. Somebody Google Representative Mike Christian.
Well, that name should set it off right there.
Because if this news story is not something, and I say this because I'm tired of getting burned.
Oklahoma House of Representatives.
Okay, so he's real.
Yeah, he's real. Well, he's real.
Well, so I don't know why that otherwise respectable, I think, German publication Der Spiegel, which means the Mirror, would want to interview representing Mike Christian of Oklahoma Stan. He's a former highway patrol trooper. And he's upset about capital punishment in Oklahoma Stan. He's not upset that Oklahoma Stan does capital punishment. He wants to do it better. Now, get this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You may already know this, Carol.
He's speaking the... Yeah, I got it. Go ahead.
Okay, so Representative Mike Christian gives an interview to the German publication Der Spiegel, in which he states that it is his desire, instead of lethal injection or hanging or shooting or anything, he wants to execute people in Oklahoma. He tells the German publication by gassing them to death. You could not.
Yeah, classy.
You couldn't pay to have this stuff written. Honest to God, you couldn't.
Well, they used to use gas in California, no?
Well, yeah, but no, you're missing the broader point here, Steve. This is a guy telling a German publication that he wants to send Oklahoma prisoners to the gas chamber.
Okay, I get you.
And what's more, he's a guy telling a German publication that he wants to gas people to death whose last name is Christian. The goddess of irony, I don't know how much overtime she put in on this, but you can't beat this stuff with a stick. He wants to, he wants to do it by putting a bag over their heads and pumping it full of nitrogen until they asphyxiate. You just sit there, and a few minutes later, it's cheaper than the bullets you need for the firing squad. It's the most humane way to die. You just sit there, and a few minutes later, you're dead.
No, it's horrible.
Wow, individual climate change.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, because his last name is Christian, he continues with Der Spiegel by saying, I don't care if we carry out our executions by lethal injection, the guillotines, or if we feed them to the lions.
Mercy. How about nailing them to a cross?
Next.
That would just be blasphemous.
Nail them up, I say. Nail some sense into them.
Well, considering most of the people they execute are black, that would, the whole image of the black Jesus thing would be sad and funny at the same time.
Oh, by the way, Carol, I have to go back to last night's conversation for a moment because I had missed it during the course of the program. But we had a comment come in from Sandra.
Yeah.
Who had followed, you know, she had previously tweeted. She tweeted, here in California, a large number of college men didn't know that having sex with a woman who was blacked out drunk is rape. And she followed up by saying, if I may use the P word, you know, patriarchy,
mm-hmm.
meaning access to women's bodies is kind of a given in this whole system. And the thing is, by this whole system, Sandra can correct me, I don't think she meant, like, the United States system. But the whole patriarchal system that seems to run rampant most of the world over. And I thought that was worth bringing up because, you know, you really can't talk about American rape culture without talking about patriarchy. Although somehow we managed to.
Alive and well in Canada too. My grandmother used to say, oh, you've got to let the man have it, or he'll wander elsewhere or break the door down. Jeez.
Oh, for heaven.
Maya, she was born in the 1890s.
Oh, and by the way, going back to Dr. Ben Carson, Jack in Shreveport points out, you know, Carson has a right-wing religious streak in him that doesn't rear its ugly head in the media enough for people to realize it. Right, because he only says this crazy shit at, like, to Wingnut Daily, and mercifully, most people aren't paying attention to that. But if he jumps out there onto the national stage, do you think the Johnny on the Spot for profit media will bother to look up that Mein Kampf quote?
Yeah, they're definitely going to out him before this is over with, and he's a guy who's going to... He's like Emlyn West without the uniform. You know?
Yeah.
He's that creepy. But I still laugh about him expounding about the virtues of Germany during World War II. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, because there were nothing Hitler loved more than black neurosurgeons. He used to crank them out by the dozen.
Oh, and just for the sake of two things, we're just kind of, I mean, this is the way the roundtable works, just for the sake of the giggles. There are two things that are bouncing around over on my Facebook page. One, and I mean, it just blew my mind, and I know it got to Sparky pretty quick. This is from a couple of nights ago. A well-respected photographer has recreated a series of iconic photographs from the 20th century with John Malkovich.
I saw those.
As the subject of the photos. There's John Malkovich as Che Guevara. There's John Malkovich as Ernest Hemingway. There's John Malkovich as a pair of 1930s little twin girls. John Malkovich as the subject of the Dorothea Lange Dust Bowl photo.
Yes.
It's really, really worth it for the mind-blowing qualities of the photography, yeah. And it's excellently done. But the other thing, and this is a fairly
The Salvador Dali one will blow your mind.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and the makeup work that had to be done for these things, because they're not photoshopped.
Right.
Guerrero Heroico, the Che Guevara photo, was just mind-blowing. Am I still connected?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, because I got...
Yep.
I got a bunch of people calling in from a separate group, and I don't know why.
Oh.
Popping
just,
up on my
just
screen.
Kill it, kill it, kill it, kill it. I don't know who it was. Tim's the only one who had power in that group left. I don't know if it was Tim.
Okay. Well, maybe it is. Whoever it is, come on by. No, but the other little funny, and this is much sillier, the other little funny that's pretty easily found on my Facebook page right now is a, let me see if I can find it here. Oh, there it is.
Bob, while you're looking that up.
Yeah, Tony posted this on my page. Yeah, go ahead, Todd.
No, I'm sorry, Nolan, the guy from the beheading down there in, what is it,
Oklahoma? Yeah.
Was shot twice and also hospitalized in stable condition. So, yeah, he's still alive.
Just well, I'm sure Mike Christian. You know. I'm sure Mike Christian is out there trying to find a tank of nitrogen, even as we speak.
Wouldn't you get like really cold before that happens?
No, not liquid.
Before you die.
No, not liquid nitrogen. I mean, what I'm saying is we're not talking about using liquid nitrogen. That'd just freeze his head, and then they could just lop it off and stick it there next to Walt Disney's and Ted Williams's.
Right, you could just knock him over, the head hits the ground, and it breaks into a lot of pieces, and it's like the end of a Terminator movie.
We're problem solvers, aren't we?
Just trying to help.
I understand. There's a great photograph, and I don't know, it came from myfridgefood.com, but Tony posted it on my Facebook page, and it simply says, as a European, this is how I imagine Americans have breakfast. And it's a little plate with a fried egg on it, a little plate with some buttered toast on it, a big plate with about 19 pounds of fried bacon on it, a mug of coffee, and a 45.
That was one old used 45, too.
Maybe that was Anatole trying to get into the...
Oh, I see it.
Isn't that beautiful? But the suggestions keep rolling in. You know, it needs a King James Bible under the 45.
Yep.
Bless his heart. Brother Albert asked, where are the poached shotgun shells?
And besides that, real Americans don't use pussy guns like that. We use, you know, AKs and ARs.
Right, exactly. I wanted to update folks. Things are going well, very well with regard to Tom's challenge. Thank you very much to Darlene. Darlene just took us to only $40. only $40 away from meeting Tom's challenge, and then that will just open the door to meeting Lauren's challenge, and we will be well over the halfway point to solving this ugly little existential crisis. Thank you to James as well. Thank you to Linda. And I wanted to share with you something that one of my dear friends in the Northwoods of northern Wisconsin said when he helped out earlier today. Rob said, in these days of environmental disaster, the voice of reason is all too rare. We have a duty to the future. Rob is a brilliant, brilliant, and I do mean brilliant poet. And I really appreciated those words because, you know, one of the things we do here is, you know, whether it's me talking about mountaintop removal or people who live in Fractopia talking about the ruination of their water and their air, or talking about the tar sands hell zone, or, you know, the snowfields or glaciers that seem to slide right off Mount Shasta, Sparky. I think we do a better job with this with that conversation than just about anybody else in the country, bar none.
They're still watching those glaciers up there, but the weather's cooled down, so they may not slide
till spring.
Well, it takes pretty hot weather to melt the underneath and. So that you finally get enough water underneath them to slide. There's a big mud flow that come down the mountain. I don't know if you saw the videos of it. But it was, it'd be scary if anybody was living there. Thank goodness nobody was. But there's snow on that mountain after the storm that rolled through.
And that must have been a humdinger.
Well, you saw them pictures. It was pouring.
I mean, how long's it been since you saw rainfall like that, Sparky?
Oh, over a year. Well over a year.
Yeah, I was keeping track of Duncan's weather, and yeah, I saw my computer go off on my phone for an aerial flood advisory, and I'm just like, well, at least that should put it in the drought.
Well, I don't think it'll, I don't think it'll end the drought, though, will it?
It put a dent in it. It ruined the fairground parking lot. I mean, there's one end of the parking lot just nothing but standing water, and they have the county fair this weekend.
Yeah, those kinds of rains don't end droughts because it doesn't have a chance to soak in. It runs off too fast. I mean, it may fill some estuaries, but it's not going to seep into the ground and soak the way that it should.
Yeah, you need a good soaking rain. I mean, we experienced the same thing on the mountaintop removal sites. You know, the soil in Appalachia is not very thick, but it is rich. It takes about 1,000 years to make 1 inch of soil in Appalachia. But when you blow a mountain away and you just leave a moonscape, water comes rushing off of it. And we've experienced an incredible flooding over the last several years here as a result of it. But you were going to say, Sparky?
I was just going to say that most of the water soaked in on my property here. I mean, if you, the one picture you can see, it looked like, you know, there's an inch of water out there on the ground in places. So it didn't run off anywhere. It just soaked in, which is really nice. Because it was drier than bone out there, except for the pasture at the back where the rancher floods. So he don't have to flood those pastures for a while. So he's happy.
So, I mean, was that just sort of a freak storm, or are you entering what you hope will be the rainy season?
We're hoping we're entering the rain season. Usually in October and November it starts. You know, December, January, February, March. You know, have rain all through those months. But last year it was just...
nothing.
Well, it rained a little bit, but nothing like that. It rained, and then it just go for days and days, and you'd be... You know, we didn't have 80-degree days in January.
How far did that rain extend, Sparky? Did it? I mean, because Southern California is still parched, right?
Yeah, I think it was just down. I know it was down south of Sacramento people were getting rain. And I'm sure it put a big dent in that big fire east of Sacramento. That was where we were getting smoke. It was really smoky here the other day.
Did the rain extend upward toward Weed and Klamath Falls and stuff?
Yeah. It was in Weed, at least, I know, because I looked at the webcam on Shasta yesterday and it had snow on it. From what I could see, it was shrouded in cloud, but there was snow on it.
Oh, and a little further good news. We are now $30 away from meeting Tom's challenge. Thank you, Robert. So,
see, it was looking bleak when we woke up this morning. It's getting better.
Yeah, it is.
Holy crap.
It is getting better. This puts us within range of being able to solve the problems. So
don't stop now.
This is no time to rest on our laurels. Tell Laurel to get up. $30 to go, and then we'll start on the $60 challenge from Lauren, who is not Laurel. PayPal button is fine, or if you want to use the traditional mail address, just shoot me a note so I can have Boss Man Wayne keep an eye out. Oh, by the way, since we're talking about climate-y things, you may recall a few months ago, a couple of months ago, it was August, I think, Alpha Natural Resources, which used to be Massey Energy, part of it, and Massey Energy, which incinerated 29 human beings beyond recognition as human beings as such, announced the layoffs of about 1,500 workers. And in so doing, they talked about how the coal market had gone soft, and they talked about them Obama job-killing regulations.
What regulations?
See.
Is that the Blankenship's company, Bob?
Well, it used to be. I mean, Don. Okay. Don's out there. He's a free agent now. Don had to quit in order for Massey to be saleable, because he was too toxic. He was too toxic even for the free market. So it was back on July the 31st when Alpha said we're going to lay off 1,500 people, because under the one of those job killing regulations is that you can't just walk in and say, hey, you're all laid off. You have to give them a couple of months' notice. It's called a warn. So what's fascinating is that, well, I mean, I'm not fascinating, but I said that this was very, very cynical, because it was done specifically for the purposes of getting the workers all head up so that they would go to the polls and vote against them godless liberal Obama-loving Democrats. And then sometime between Thanksgiving and probably after Christmas, around January 1, everybody would be called back to work.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't know. I may have to go out and actually replace the old tattered purple velvet wizard's robe with the frayed moon and stars appliques on it, and buy myself an actual functioning magic eight ball that doesn't just always say answer hazy ask again later. Because via a publication called CoalAge.com, this just came in, Alpha Natural Resources said that three of its operating affiliates have no, that means the operating affiliates means that three of the shell companies underneath them that exist to provide an insulation, liability insulation against the mother corporation. Alpha Natural Resources said that three of its operating affiliates have notified their employees that the coal mines where they work are being idled, resulting in job losses. One mine that had expected to be idled will continue to operate, while 8 other mines have extended the period of time that they will continue to operate. The company originally issued worker adjustment and retraining notifications, WARNs, for 11 different West Virginia mine sites, plus certain support operations, advising workers that their facilities were subject to being idled on September 29th due to sustained weak market conditions and government regulations challenging the Central Appalachian mining industry. Independence Coal's Twilight surface mine in Boone County and Pioneer Fuel's Ewing Fork No. 1 PAX surface mine in Kanawha and Raleigh counties will be idled immediately. Some 193 positions will be eliminated, while approximately 35 employees will be retained to perform reclamation work, yeah, sure, and wind down operations to an idle state. The two mines will be maintained in a condition for the immediate future that will allow them to restart should market conditions and coal demand improve. Combined, the two sites shipped approximately 760,000 tons of steam coal in the first half of this year and 660,000 tons of metallurgical coal. So they put that at the top, but then, no, it turns out that 8 of the 11 operations are going to keep working. I mean, for over 100 years, the coal industry has been lying to Appalachia. Here's another. Jesus. Alex Energy's Ed White mine in Raleigh County did not extend its WARN notification period and will continue to operate as usual. And so now the 8 operations that received WARN extension notices with a revised idling date of November 26th or within the following 2-week period include yada, 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 yada. Hey, look, it's right after Thanksgiving. So if the coal company can just crap on its workers through the Christmas season, I mean, well, at this point in time, they all ought to be done pretty much to a tender turn and ready to run, not walk, to the nearest polling place to vote against anybody who's ever done anything but spit on that Kenyan muslin in the White House. Ain't capitalism grand?
All politics are local.
Does that happen every election time?
Oh, this ain't the first one. You may recall back in 2012, Bob Murray, Murray Energy, had that outfit in Ohio where he made every worker at his coal mine come out and be a human stage prop for Bishop Willard Romney.
I saw that, and they would get fired if they didn't do it.
With the understanding that they didn't show, I mean, they didn't even get to go to the bathhouse. They had to come out all filthy and stuff.
And they weren't paid.
And they were not paid, and it was understood that if they did not show up, there is no need to come to work the next morning. And after that, there were stories that came out that the workers were also shaken down to make donations to that multi-billionaire's political campaign. Now, way down in this here story, it says, Cumulatively, these actions are being triggered by persistent weakness in domestic and overseas coal demand and depressed pricing, comma, along with government regulations that are causing electric utilities to close coal-fired power plants and forego new construction. A glut of coal also has contributed to falling prices in international markets. Where would it... Gee, anybody... Where would a glut of coal come from?
Shutting down coal-powered plants and replacing them with renewables, like, you know, say, Germany.
Yeah. Or perhaps...
And or Tony Abbott in Australia flooding the market for the Chinese.
That. But how about overproduction...
The coal ferry.
But how about overproduction on the part of... On the part of these not particularly well-run corporations.
Oh, but corporations always do exactly the thing. Yeah, it's the coal fairy. Or the coal demon or something.
And then, and then there's
coal being a byproduct of, you know, removing tops of mountains, you know, all of a sudden you keep taking tops off of mountains, and the next thing you know, you got a glut of coal.
Precisely. I love this quote. Because see, the author, and this is, you know, this is a pro-coal publication, Coal Age. When was the Coal Age? How many hundreds of million years ago was that? I'm surprised they don't have to put this out on, you know, carved on stone tablets.
Stone tablets.
Wilma! Alpha's president, Paul Vining, said, "This is another step in the ongoing process of adapting to a dynamic coal market, with operations making adjustments to match the opportunities we see. Our operations managers and our sales group are working together to ensure that we're in balance with customer demand and able to sustain the company profitably from the set of mines that will continue to operate." That's a whole paragraph of the sentence there. I didn't hear anything about the goddamn tree huggers, did you?
To which I reply, no, Bernie.
Oh, you do that real well. Can you do that on demand?
Yes.
Can we have it again?
No, Bernie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and
I think that's going to have to be an MP3, folks. We're going to need that for a drop, Carol.
I can do that.
Both you and Devin have priceless laughs. Let me just say that much.
You didn't know I could do Kathleen Turner and Betty Rubble.
Oh, what a knockout punch!
Yep, we'll just call her Ray Rice. Oh, wait.
Oh, wrong. That was just wrong.
Too soon?
Too soon.
Sorry. It was hanging above the net, and you're hanging above the rim. And
I understand. No, but what Cersei said is true. If we could figure out a way that it wouldn't drive Skype crazy, and we could do a laugh track of Devin and Carol laughing at the same time, devastating.
Now, you got to get my sister in there, too, because I'll tell you what, she laughs just like I do.
Oh, Barbie?
Yes.
Barbie. Hi, Barbie.
By the way, she IM'd me, and she said thank you, everyone. She felt the love.
We're so glad. And if she's got an equally compelling laugh, she's welcome to the conversation, too.
She does. When we get together, like, we'll walk through the grocery store, and every head turns because it's like, we do it in unison.
Is that after you get done picking up a couple pounds of Brontosaurus burger and, you know, the dino ribs?
Sparky.
No, it's not.
I'm working on adding a new guy.
Oh, yeah? Who we got coming?
Yeah. Ron Kettleson.
Oh, cool. Ron's coming.
Pounds of Brontosaurus burger and
you got to mute your radio, Ron.
Sparky. Sorry, when you don't hear yourself, it's funnier when you do.
I love that. I thought you were doing it again.
No.
Hey, by the way, thanks very much to Anthony. Just got a note from Anthony, and we are now down to only $25 to go to meet Tom's ozone challenge.
Yay!
Anthony says, "Thanks, Bob. Please know that what y'all do means the world to me." Thank you, Anthony. That's the kind of stuff that makes this all worth continuing on, because it does mean something to people.
By the way, thanks very much.
Well, come on, people, just $25 more. Come on, we can do it.
Yeah, 85 when we're gonna keep Lauren's on the table too, so it's 85, but it's 25 to finish the ozone challenge, and then what did Lauren say? It's Lauren's 60th birthday senescence challenge.
Well, come on, people, just put 25.
Yeah, and then Lauren said, "I like the challenges on the show, and I crave attention." So do not let Lauren's craving for attention go unnoticed. So we've got an hour to do $85. Yes, was that you, Devin?
Yes. I was wondering about that publication, the coal publication. Was it recorded on carbon copy?
Boom, boom. He'll be here all night. Leave the veal alone. Although it would be kind of fun to write and ask if they provided carbon copies. I mean, they're not very pro-coal if they don't,
probably,
are they?
It's probably recorded on carbonite.
No, that's where they back their computers up.
Mm-hmm.
Did the Carboniferous period with the dinosaurs?
I know it was swamps, and I know there were little shellfish because of the movement of the Titanic plates.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, you know, I'm willing to bet when they back their computers up with carbonite, I'm willing to bet you they don't put Stephanie in the bombs.
No. Let's see. Okay, so here's an answer to the question. The Carboniferous period extends from the end of the Devonian period, about 358.9 plus or minus 0.4 million years ago. I think we can forget the rounding error there. To the beginning of the Permian, about 289.
Is that when Devon was born?
Yeah, that was the Devonian. Yes, that's the Devonian. That's the Devonian period.
Devon's years. Oh.
The first time, you know.
The first
time. Recycled a few times.
Oh, you've been born again and again and again and again?
Devon started out as a tiny little little shellfish that got that was sitting next to a giant palm-sized fern in the Devonian period.
Yeah, and then I turned into a lump of coal, and then some idiot burned the lump of coal and released me again upon this earth. You know.
There was no Santa Claus and stocking involved with that?
You're beginning to sound a little like Cthulhu, Devon. I'm worrying.
No. The stocking had a hole in it, apparently. I mean, you know.
Oh, okay. So the question about the dinosaurs, Steve. The question about the dinosaurs, there was life during the Carboniferous period, according to Wikipedia.
Yeah, Adam and Eve, wasn't it? Somewhere around there?
Yes. No. Amphibians were the dominant land vertebrates. One branch would eventually evolve into reptiles. There were also a lot of arthropods, which basically boils down to really humongous freaking clams and oysters and stuff. Yum, yum.
I think I dated her in high school, but anyway.
This here conversation's bordering on blasphemy.
If we're only bordering, we're not working hard enough, Miss Carol.
Yeah, let's blast through the border and get straight to the Capitol, huh?
Hear, hear. Just like them ISIL head-lopping hordes are coming across the dried-out Rio Grande.
Do you remember when Sarah Palin wanted to put an aircraft carrier in the Rio Grande?
I don't remember that. Wait, really? She's old.
Yes, she actually said that. I'm sitting there going, bitch, I can walk across it. Where do you think you're going to dry dock it?
Heave! But now that we know that the White House is at 1400 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Oh, yeah, that really got me earlier during when you were talking about that, Bob. I was just like, I heard you say 1400, and I was thinking, wait, did Bob misread or did Sarah misstate? I'm betting it's the latter.
And here's the funny part. I bet if you go back and you watch the video, there's no tittering or anything among the values voters. Yeah, 1400 Pennsylvania Avenue. Wolverines!
Tittering's the only reason I watch her.
Okay, so we got to stop throwing them basketballs up above the rim because Todd's going to get tired.
Just call me LeBron.
Yeah, well, I already did that, didn't I?
At least it's not bubs on the ground.
There was an apology for that, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah, I heard it.
Yeah, dude apologized to his wife.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Good idea.
That lets him get in the front door at least one more time.
More's the pity.
He got
not out to sleep in the car again.
That was the lamest apology I'd ever heard in my life. Because when you apologize, aren't you supposed to, like, indicate that you know? Aren't you supposed to, like, repeat what you said wrong?
No, not if you're a Republican, Carol. If you're a Republican, you get to apologize if anybody was offended.
Right, capital if.
Yeah, that's the non-apology apology.
Well, I was waiting for that, but he didn't say it. It was, I'm sorry, Deck. I got the look when I got home. I'm sorry, Deck my head. I'm going, sorry for what? You didn't say what you were sorry for. You're sorry because your wife won't put out until you say you're sorry?
Or maybe just being.
You know, there's so many things you can get away with that I can't, Carol.
Yeah, he's a sorry SOB.
Yes, I know, Bob. That's why I'm a giver.
Yes. Carol Giver Baker.
I mean that in the dirtiest way.
God bless you. By the way, just in case you were worrying about freedom here in America, because I know we all do, how about a quick trip down to DeKalb County, Alabama, Stan? There's
what on earth?
There's a woman person down there who is a donor for, I guess, the sheriff's race in DeKalb County. And she wants people to understand how important the sheriff's race is down there in DeKalb County. We're talking about Mrs. Frank L. Mason of Mentone, Alabama, Stan. She goes by Betty, Mrs. Frank does.
Miss Betty.
Right. And she's a good American. And she says, "Dear DeKalb County voter," that's capital D, little e, capital K-A-L-B, DeKalb. "Dear DeKalb County voter, thank you for being an active citizen of our county. I'm sure you will be interested in the enclosed brochure. Rex Leith is running for DeKalb County sheriff and is highly qualified for the job. His opponent is on the same team with President Obama."
Not the head.
I know. Get the smelling salts handy. Obama is determined to be a dictator with executive orders he signs. He has left the U.S. Constitution in shreds. If Obama decides to run again against U.S. law, or declares a national emergency to suspend elections in 2016, what will our Democrat sheriff do? I am concerned that he will go along with this lawless president. The sheriff is the county's highest law enforcement officer. And these days, his actions of defending the citizens again in lawlessness is critical. Rex Leith has pledged to defend our citizens against a lawless president. Please read the enclosed brochure and vote for Rex Leith for sheriff on Election Day, Tuesday, November 4th. Thank you again, sincerely, Betty. P.S.
I can only imagine how many boxes.
P.S. Come on September 29th to the Mentone Brow Park and greet Rex Leith, 4 p.m. to 6:30 p.m.
Yeah, we
I can
didn't
only
get
imagine
a tennis...
how many...
Go ahead, please, Serge.
I can only imagine how many boxes of crayons they had to go through to make all those brochures.
I'm looking at a tennis ball
and duct tape warning.
I'm looking at the PDF reproduction of it. I'm pretty sure that's a typewritered letter.
I'm frankly a little upset that there was no mention of Jesus in there.
Well, when you're writing down in Mentone, Alabama, Stan Carroll, Jesus goes as read.
Praise the Lord.
Amen. Hallelujah.
And pass the ammunition.
Well, and the grits. Oh, speaking of pass the ammunition, Jesus, this is a tough one. This is just awesome.
Jesus is a red?
Well, not that kind of red, Devin. Damn commies is everywhere.
But he was a socialist.
Yeah, well, and so, what did Paul say? We held all things in common? Yeah.
Yeah, they don't read that part.
I have it on very good authority that Rex and Betty are second cousins.
Not very well
and
removed.
Together?
Not very well removed.
Not at all.
So, you know that old saying that, well, it's Alabama. Forget it, Jake. It's Alabama. No, not that old saying. The old saying that Pennsylvania is Philadelphia in the east and Pittsburgh in the west and Alabama in the middle. Let's swing on up to Alabama in the middle, York County, Pennsylvania. It was 6:30 yesterday evening in Salzburg in York County, Pennsylvania. And a brand new daddy was holding his 5-day-old little baby on his lap and sitting on the couch. Okay, so who's got the audio loop going? Oh, okay. Thank you, Roger.
Gone now.
Okay, must have been Roger.
No, it was Ron. He can't figure out how to mute his mic.
Oh, okay.
I removed him.
No offense. Anyway, so new daddy is holding his 5-day-old baby sitting on the couch in Salzburg, York County, Pennsylvania. That is when a bullet grazed the 5-day-old's head. No kidding. Here's the good news. The baby's okay and expected to survive.
Do I get to say it was God's will now?
I reckon.
I heard that. I heard somebody go, "Urgh."
But, officials say the shot was likely fired by one of a group of hunters across the street on private property. Several species of small game, including coyotes, opossums, porcupines, striped skunks, weasels, and woodchucks, are currently in season in Pennsylvania.
As are 5-day-old babies.
And apparently 5-day-old babies.
It's 5-day-old baby season.
Wabbit season. No, see, I get...
Duck season.
Wabbit season. Elma season.
Duck season.
No, see, several coyotes, opossums, porcupines, striped skunks, weasels, woodchucks. Hey, Doc, it doesn't say anything there about rabbits.
And rabbits. And 5-year-olds. 5-day-olds.
Another old duct tape gone.
God knows if we go through this stuff. I think we need to find our own brand of duct tape. Yeah, because there's all kinds of designer duct tape out there now. Yeah,
oh, good promo item.
Yeah. Oh my God, wouldn't that be great? Horn logo duct tape.
I think it would be awesome to have horn logo duct tape and horn logo tennis balls and horn logo hockey pucks. Yes. It can offer us some premiums.
No, well, you got to get some of that duct tape with the pink zebra stripes on it.
No, I don't have to.
Most of us aren't that kinky, Devin.
I don't really like that either, so no.
I get the kind with handcuffs and chains and...
Oh, jeez.
I'll never forget the day that we were in the... The little sporting
goods. Isn't it tough to color coordinate all the everything else with that?
The little
Bob.
Yes.
Bob.
Kathy.
Bob, you got to tell the story about the very first horn T-shirt and Agnes.
No, I won't.
Please. Yeah.
It was so well intended.
Yes. Tell it.
Why do I get the feeling there's a but then?
No, there's not a but. This. Well, yeah, there's kind of a but then. So our earliest logo was of like the front end of a like a 50s sedan with the blaring headlights coming at you out of the darkness. You know, the head on radio network.
Nice and, headlights.
And so we bought T-shirts with that imprinted on them.
They work much better on guys than they did on women.
Well, that's your opinion.
It seemed like a good idea at the time.
Several women folk put the T-shirts on and said, "Very funny, Bob."
The horn section logo would look good on boxers.
I'm in agreement.
And a rare live appearance by Betsy on Friday on the front porch. Shh, be very quiet. She spooks real easy.
It's a miracle, Bob.
It is. It's a Rosh Hashanah miracle. Is that what it is? I don't know. The T-shirts didn't work out real well. And shortly thereafter, it was most pleasing to have a member of the Horn family, Mike, in Western PA, redesign the logo, which is the logo you see now, which is just beautiful with the the Shure SM55 microphone worked into the horn. Yeah. But you know what? Stuff like horn hockey pucks and horn tennis balls and horn duct tape. I wonder if you could go to something like Zazzle and design that.
Heck, yeah, of course you can. And we could sell them. Fundraisers.
That could be fun.
Bob, you and I should talk after the program about T-shirts because my son is now working for an apparel company.
Oh, okay. Okie doke. It's definitely a
possibility. But it's not a hockey puck company. I'm sorry.
But you know, there are those companies out there that'll, you know, they'll put your logo on anything.
Anything?
Anything.
Anything that can be. All right. Damn it, Todd, get away from the rim. Anything that can be drop shipped, okay?
Speaking of putting the horn logo on things.
I'm just moving back to the 3-point line here. Just
now you're just going to bomb.
I'll be waiting patiently here.
I'm sorry, that was not just like Matt.
Kath, now is the time to put in that ball gag.
No, that's what the tennis ball's for in the first place. Will you quit working blue, Devin? Damn it. This is not a...
Okay, I think I'm gonna try and be the one to get the bus back on the road here. Because
good freaking luck, Sergi.
Is that what they're calling it these days?
Yeah, next month here in Fort Worth, Texas, Dan, there is a street festival called Open Streets, where they close down Magnolia Avenue and, they set up.
It's called Open Streets, yet they're closing streets down.
Stop it, Todd.
Color me confused.
Well, here's the thing. It's they shut the streets down to car traffic and they set up, food booths and other booths, and they have all these activities and skateboarding and all this stuff like that. And it's basically, a celebration of urbanism. Okay. And my little progressive society project, the Tempest Nation, is we are planning to set up shop there to try and promote our brand. Well, at the same time, I would love to also be promoting the horn. So if anyone is able to print out like maybe like a banner or and have it shipped little flyers, posters, or something like that. Because, I mean, it, you know, a project like this goes hand in hand with progressive conversation radio. So I'd love to promote Horn at the same time. If anyone in this group or anyone listening would be able to coordinate that, it's at the end of October.
Wow. That could be really, really cool. We used to have a banner till the letters fell off.
Was it glue on?
It was a vinyl banner, and yeah, I mean the letters kind of are stuck to it.
Were.
Oh, there's a banner shop down here. If you want a banner, Sergi, I don't know how much it costs to make it.
They're expensive.
Yeah, they're pricey.
Yeah, I mean, you know, here's the thing, you know, Open Streets being a celebration of urbanism, it tends to attract liberals. And so, you know, I mean, it's pretty much, you're not allowed, I mean, they shut the street down to cars, but you're still allowed to ride bicycles, you know. It attracts.
Oh, you know, maybe just some little flyers with the logo and the URL and the podcast address and stuff like that would be a good start.
Sergi, what is this again?
It's called Open Streets. If you Google Open Streets. Oh, when is it? It's at the end of October, the last Sunday in October.
So we got a little time to work with.
Yeah, but it's too close for me to sew anything. But if anybody else has more time than I do.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, maybe one of the best things we could do would be handbilling.
Be a good place to start.
Yeah.
Cheap.
Hey, good news. Extraordinarily good news.
We made it.
Tom's Ozone Challenge has been met.
Woohoo!
And we are only $35 away from meeting Lauren's Craving Attention Challenge.
Hot damn.
Awesome.
With a solid 38 minutes to go in the program.
Could you correspond with Tom and ask him if he'd like some smoky ghost cheese and some pistachios?
I was going to suggest that very thing. And I will.
I know it costs a little bit more because I need a bigger box, but I will gladly do that.
That would be a lovely gesture, Sparky. Oh, and by the way... Go ahead.
I've been spreading the legend of the smoky ghost cheese around here.
It ain't a legend. It's real.
You know, my brother loves venison. I wonder, it would probably go good with some of that.
Yeah, but these U.S. postal shipping boxes, you can't get them to go out the country in 2 days. They're priority mail boxes.
My brother-in-law a box number over the state, so I could probably go pick it up, no?
Yeah, if you had a U.S. address.
Yeah, because he gets parts for his aircraft business, so maybe I could ask him.
Check in and find out. And one other thing, Randy is reminding me something. Randy has had a mug. Randy had a beautiful coffee mug made over at Zazzle with the Horn logo on it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I want one.
Well, so we need to, you know, that's one of those community things. We've got to find enough hours in the day to run and manage this stuff.
True enough. But now that it's out there and on the table, and everybody, there's an awareness, we can all...
Well, what I need to do is I need to photograph that mug, and then I'll just put it up on the... I'll put it up on my Facebook page or something.
That'd be cool.
Hello.
Is that Larry?
That's Larry. Yeah.
There's Larry.
Larry.
Hi.
Yeah, we got a great. By the way, we got a great group in here this evening. We got Sparky, and I usually do the intros, but We got Sparky and Sergi and Waggy and Betsy and Ron and Larry. And we got Carol and Todd and Kath and Steve and Devin and Roger's in there, too.
Dang.
It is an extraordinary roundtable. I'm telling you. I don't just say things.
Hi, Larry.
Hi there, Waggy. How are you? Hello, everyone.
No, that was Steve.
Oh, Steve. Sorry, Steve.
Hi, Larry.
Either Larry.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for saying hello.
Roger, what's happening in your world?
I'm glad I'm in bed. What's that?
I was asking Roger what's going on in his world.
Well, we had a little bit of rain that Dunk talked about. Got me pretty wet. And, you know, it's just typical farming. I picked, 50, 60 pounds of broccoli the other day, and I'm just trying to take care of the garden, which is why I don't get in very often. But I do try to listen with my little laptop out in the garden, and I'm just working.
So what else besides broccoli is still in the garden this time of year?
Oh, I got beets and lettuce and snow peas, broccoli, cauliflower. I'm picking green beans for the seed I sell to an outfit in Missouri. I keep busy.
Oh, the beet. Well, it's that time of year, and you start thinking about warm. You know, well, I know borscht is supposed to be served cold, but I love it warm too. And fresh beets, borscht, yummy.
Well, I put 15, 18 pounds of broccoli into the food dehydrator today to dry up, so in the middle of winter we can have cream of broccoli soup and the rest of that, and I don't have to take up freezer space because it'll be dehydrated and put in jars and vacuum sealed and store on the shelf. Anyhow.
That's awesome.
Now that I'm talking, it seems like you've shifted on your rebroadcast later at night to going back to programs from a week ago, a week and a half ago, instead of rebroadcasting tonight's show at like 9 o'clock at night when I'm crawling into bed and I put my earphones on and kind of want to listen to tonight's show later on, and I'm getting one from a week and a half away.
There's a reason for that, Roger, and there's actually an answer to it. When we had to switch to metered bandwidth here, it eliminated my ability to run the rerun stream from here. So Ben is running it right now. And, in fact, he and I had a conversation via text messages the other day. And I told him how I had been running things. So hopefully it'll transition back to that. And one of the things that goes with this whole funding crisis that's going on right now is that I will be going back to running the rerun stream personally.
Well, the rerun stream to me is what I really need, because live is 3 to 6 in the afternoon.
Right. I'm working.
Sorry. It's garden time. I'm out working. But I really love being able to crawl into bed, put my headphones in, and listen to you for 3 hours. And all of a sudden I'm getting a program that I've heard twice before. There are good programs, don't get me wrong, but I've already heard them.
Well, they lose a little bit on the third trip through now, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Could be hook rod.
Well, you can download the podcast.
Yeah, and then I have to, instead of having my Wi-Fi radio next to my bed, I got to have the computer there and do podcasts and program it.
There's a reason for the rerun stream, and it's a very sensible one. And like I said, with any luck at all, within the next week or so, I'll take that back over.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
So hopefully your patience will last that long. But, yeah, somewhere around October 3rd or so, I should be, maybe October 4th, I should be having the rerun stream back in my possession.
Well, you know, I mean, you used to put on Dr. Bill and then you and Dr. Bill and then you, and it was reruns from earlier in the evening.
Yeah, it just looped for 24 hours, and that's... And then on the week, and then on the weekends, what I would do is I would put on every program that ran during the week. It would be Dr. Bill, me, and then Tuesday's Dr. Bill and me, and Wednesday's Dr. Bill and me, and then me, and then it would just start all over again.
And
then
Tuesday's Dr. Bill. And that's great. I loved it.
Somebody's echoing.
Yeah, I'm getting it too.
And that's great.
Is it me?
No, it's Ron. I got to shut you down, Ron.
Sorry, Ron.
Okay.
Speaking of rerun streams, the goddess of irony never takes a minute. Never takes a minute.
Oh, and Bob, I wanted to ask you, when are you going to be on Chris Hayes?
Ah, okay.
I forgot.
So the I'd like to answer that definitively, but I can't.
Yes.
But we know, but we know for a fact, because the promo is out there. If you've got it, if you've got it handy, or if anybody has it handy, could you pop it into the chat room and the Skype chat as well? That would be awfully nice. We know from the promo that it is going to begin on Monday, the 6th of October, and it's a series, and so there will be a segment every night that week, if I understand correctly.
Yeah.
So I don't know which segment, or I don't know if I'm going to be interspersed, or hell, I may wind up on the cutting room floor. What's in the promo may be as much of me as there is. I hope not, because we shot a ton.
But it's such an important subject, and you know it's important if Chris Hayes is giving it a week.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that, well, I hope we can do our part, our little community here, to spread word of this thing far and wide. Not because I'm an egomaniac, but because I want a lot more people to know what the gravity is relative to what coal is doing to this country and doing to this region. Not doing to
the world.
Yeah.
Well, there's that, Roger.
You know, Bob, this is not about you. This is about saving you and everyone else that happens to be affected by that, and also saving the world, because, you know, I mean, people need to understand that this kind of process is destroying people in your state, and ultimately the mindset behind it and the practices behind it are going to ultimately destroy, you know, everyone else if we keep on going this way. I think I've got it clear. Maybe I'm missing something.
No, that's a pretty clear restatement of the reality, Larry.
You know what I'm saying? It's not about Bob. It's about you know, getting the word out there.
Oh, come on. Can it be a little bit? Wait. Can it be a little bit about Bob? Just a little bit?
Yes.
Very tiny little
detail. It's a whole lot about Bob, but I would like to push another thing. And that's Tom Hartman's book about ancient sunlight. I don't have the book in front of me right now.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight.
Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. Incredible read. I mean, if you take and you suck up this fossil sunlight from under the earth and you go up to 35,000 feet and you burn it in an airplane and you don't expect a problem, you are one dumb F-er.
Well, yeah, and there's the larger I admit to being Appalachocentric, but there's the issue of the fact that I came up with this trope, and we're pushing it for all we're worth, that when you talk about coal in Appalachia, what you're talking about in Appalachia is the cradle of climate change. To the extent that the United States has probably contributed more to climate change than any other country in the history of the world, the beginnings of all that happen in Appalachia. It's where coal's first discovered on the North American continent, and it was Appalachian coal that fueled the rise of the Industrial Revolution in the United States. So in order to deal with climate change in this country, we have to deal with Appalachia, and we have to deal with coal in Appalachia.
But it's also important to remember that all of those toxins they're pumping into that By God West Virginia water isn't staying in By God West Virginia. It's flowing downstream into other states.
Absolutely.
So
and
if you think it isn't about you, it's about you.
Well, exactly. We are all downstream and we are all downwind. You know, you there in Hooterville, Carol, you're in one of the most coal-fired states in the Union.
Absolutely.
Missouri can't get enough to burn. I mean, they'd burn right. more if they could.
And we can't get enough tar sands pretty quick, too.
Gonna love, if you love coal, you'll love tar sands.
I love tar sands.
Oh.
And yet if everybody put a solar panels on their roof, we wouldn't need to do it.
Bingo! Yep,
that's exactly right. Bob, I know we're talking about coal, but... Oh, sorry. I stepped
if everybody could afford to put it on their roof, then it wouldn't be a problem.
Right, Devin, and that's where government comes from. You know, we subsidize the living...
Sorry, Devin, you can't afford not to put it on your roof.
But when the energy
Some
companies
people can't
are punishing...
Well, to put
there
it
is
on
not,
their roof.
Excuse me. There's no way for us to finance it. We do not have the credit for it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't get the money to finance it, then
and
that's the truth.
There are national organizations that will put it on your roof at no charge to you because they will lease your rooftop.
Not in West Virginia, Roger.
There are national companies that are doing it now.
Well, they're not.
They will put a solar panel on your roof, and they, quote, lease it to you.
I know about that.
It doesn't cost you money.
I'm desperate to get solar here. Wait, Kathy, please. I have done the research on it. I'm desperate to get solar here. I want so badly to take the horn off the coal-fired grid I can bust. And I talked to a number of those solar leasing companies. They cannot and they will not do it in West Virginia.
Well, then color me wrong. I'm sorry.
I mean, I'm not being mean here.
The laws here are such that you can't do it.
Now, if you can afford...
Unless you buy it yourself and put it on there.
If you can afford to buy it yourself and put it up, there are actually tax credits available in the state of West Virginia. But if you're sitting there sweating a $200, $300 electric bill in winter, there is no way, I mean, you can't turn off the coal-fired electricity long enough to save up the money for the solar panels. This, what I was going to say a few minutes ago, is this is where government has to be proactive. We subsidize the living F-all out of the coal, oil, and gas industries. It is about damn time we start subsidizing solar. The reason, if you drive around Germany, the reason that you see solar panels everywhere is because the German government subsidized the installation of solar on every available piece of flat roof space.
In Missouri, pay a penalty.
Bob, may I ask a question? My feeling is that what corporations do and these big conservative companies do is that in order to keep their profit margin, they already know that solar energy is going to be better. They already know this. What they're hoping is that these little solar energy companies are going to come along and they're going to develop the infrastructure and they're going to do all the research and development and they're going to do all this and then they're going to drive all these other small companies out of business. And then what's going to happen is when they deem that it is profitable under a capitalistic system to start selling solar energy for profit. That's when these companies are going to start introducing it, and not until. Can somebody try to help me analyze what I just said?
A lot of that makes a lot of sense, and let's add into that. Let's factor into that. For instance, there was a story out of Wisconsin last week, and I don't know why I didn't get to it on air. I should have. But there was a story out of Wisconsin last week that talked about the fact that the Scott Walker Republican government of that state is doing everything in its power to punish people and prevent them from putting up solar. And people in Wisconsin are pissed. But you know why that's going on? I mean, it's not like Scott Walker's got the brain power to come up with that by himself. If you go back in the Horn archives to, say, spring of this year, you'll find a discussion about the fact that the Koch brothers and their cronies, evil minions or whatever we want to call them, they had their meeting and they declared, it was the Alec meeting, I think. They declared that their goal for this year was to punish people for using solar and to get rid of, and they created this term, free riders. You know, which isn't that far from freebooters or freeloaders. Because they have determined that people who have solar panels are somehow taking away from the poor, poor, noses pressed against the frosty window pane, coal and gas fired utilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's being put into play in Wisconsin. And it's being put into play in other places as well.
As we've seen, in the past year, Alec has opened up an office in Charleston.
I guess what I'm saying, Devin, and I guess what I'm saying, Bob, is that if these companies know that solar power is, we need to have the solar power, but what they want to do is they want to wait until they know that they can have a monopoly on providing the solar power, and that by that time, solar power will have been perfected, solar power will have been developed, and solar power will have been accepted by the majority of society, and by that time, they'll have a monopoly on the product, and they'll be able to charge exorbitant amounts of money in order to provide this solar power that everybody knows is going to be better for the society.
I don't think you said it wrong the first time, Larry. And in fact, it's kind of echoed. Just got a message in via Facebook from James, and he says, "Public utilities run power plants. There's no reason why they should not be placing solar on rooftops rather than continuing to buy coal to build plants. It's just politics." Oh, and solar roadways are actually better than solar rooftops, and that's true.
I'm not going to argue about solar roadways and all the rest of it, but on the rare occasions that my solar system pumps more back into the utility than I'm dealing with, which is a rare day. But the fact is, the freeload number is, well, I'm providing power to the grid, and I'm not paying for the grid. Excuse me, sucker. I've been paying for the grid for years and years and years. If I happen to generate an extra 250 watts and feed it back into the grid, what's your problem? The problem is that the PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, isn't being able to charge somebody else for that excess energy. And they're forced by the laws in California to pay me the 35 cents a kilowatt hour on the middle of the day when it's producing instead of the 15 cents a kilowatt hour I pay at night because I'm on a time of use kind of garbage.
Well, yeah, and see, that's the other side of the coin, Roger, is that if you really want to get serious about alternative energy, you need, either on a state-by-state or particularly and more effectively on a federal level, something called a feed-in tariff that allows people who are feeding energy onto the grid to be paid for it. Now, if I put up, and it sounds like you're describing the same thing in Northern California, if I put up solar here and I'm producing excess energy and it goes onto the grid, I don't get a goddamn dime for it. The most they'll do is adjust my electric bill downward. But they do not have
That's all I get here is an adjustment on my electric bill. If I generate excess,
not a dime.
They get it for free.
Not a dime, exactly. And that's got to change. And they fight that. And the reason Alec is doing what they're doing, and Ron and Raleigh was right there thinking the same thing I was. He said, you know, ALEC is putting forth pilot legislation to its members to have power production by solar means be charged extra by power companies to discourage free riders. And that's exactly what you were talking about, Roger. They're trying to drag us backwards because they don't, what James was saying about, you know, why not put solar up on blah, blah, blah. They don't want to. They are firmly committed to the hydrocarbon model. And what's more, and we need to understand it in this way, the power companies are firmly committed to killing humanity. They are committed to species extinction.
I have two separate solar systems on my property. One of them is intertied to PG&E, which is the house. I have another one on the barn. And I irrigate a one-acre garden off of four 150-watt panels and a bank of batteries and a shallow well. And I pump out of the well into a 1,200-gallon tank, and then I have another pump that distributes to the drip irrigation and the rest of it. And I do not use PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, to water my garden. I do it totally off of solar. And they don't want to lose that. They want to keep people dependent on the fossil fuel-generated electricity.
Absolutely.
Follow money.
Yeah, because they want to keep on making the money.
But see, Roger, when I hear you describe the system...
They have to.
When I hear you describe the system you're running, Roger, it gets me all excited. I mean, if I could go down to the farmer's market and buy broccoli that I knew was absolutely non-capitalist produced, I'd buy extra.
Well, I'm sorry. It is capitalist produced because I use gasoline or diesel to run the tractor and rototiller and, you know, the rest of that kind of stuff. But the irrigation is solar.
Yeah. Okay, minimal capitalism. How's that?
Yeah, minimal.
I wanted to ask Devin a question. You were saying, well, they have to. Are you saying that because this is a capitalist system, the logic of the system?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's not what I'm saying.
Let me
explain.
Okay.
They have to because they have such an investment in the system as it is that to walk away from that, they're done.
You're exactly right.
It will destroy them.
You're exactly right. Yes.
So solar is a disruptive technology to them, and a coal-fired power plant or nuclear power plant or whatever. I mean, you know, they cost many billions of dollars to build and many billions to maintain and operate.
Yes. So they
As does the entire massively inefficient grid. Yeah. It's all got costs baked in that we don't have to have anymore in the 21st century. And we need to understand that at a very, very basic level. You know, one of the things that it's easy for us to forget about, unless I sort of jump in, is that the Friday on the Front Porch conversation takes in a lot more folks than those just talking on the panel. And I've just gotten a couple of really good emails, and I want to make sure we share them. Bruce just wrote in and said, the banks are the hub of the wheel of destruction that drives everything you folks are talking about. Just think, you, me, and every other person in America, and that's America spelled with three Ks, by the way, has just pledged our future to the current economic system by bailing the bastards out in 2008. Every corporation in America is financed by the bankers. The banksters determine where the investments are made to keep their money model working for the people that own the most money. And just a little note to Bruce, you're welcome in the conversation anytime. Meanwhile, our buddy Lib in South Carolina just said, just yesterday, a big energy producer in Australia got busted for overcharging customers due to the use of solar power. In other words, they're hurting the bottom line because people are making their own energy. Meanwhile, some coke-sucking Texas Republican House member is introducing a bill to ban any expenditures for renewable energy sources for any Veterans Administration facility. Remember the VA nursing home in Louisiana that had to be evacuated after Katrina? Only because they had no electricity.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a future out there if we only want to go to it. And by the way, I want to throw in some exquisite news. We have not only met Tom's ozone challenge, we have met Lauren's craving for attention challenge as well.
Lauren just got my attention.
Absolutely. And we did that via our buddy Jay Cruzen.
I want to shout out to
who the, works in the power industry, by the way.
Who does indeed.
Yeah, he does. And so did you.
Yes. I built a lot of things, Larry.
Yes, you sure did.
But I wanted to jump in and say, every time I go to Reading, I see a new solar company truck driving on the freeway going somewhere. They're all over the place. And then when I did my little trip to the mountains, there's this big ranch farm area in the Fall River Valley. And the guy had his sprinklers out irrigating his alfalfa. And he's got this huge solar field right by his pump station.
Goddamn.
So he's running his pumps on solar power, so he ain't paying Pacific Craft and Extortion to run that pump.
Yeah. So my question is that with the all these problems, all these issues being so complex and being so nuanced and everything, where you have people discussing the minute details of this and that and the other in an academic setting, is it possible to just simply have some kind of general notion in one's head, or some kind of broad-based, you know, analysis that encompasses everything? Because there's always going to be somebody out there that's going to try to poke holes and say,
Larry,
hey, it's too general.
Larry, if there is, if and this is not a personal criticism, but if there is one thing I would note after years of interaction with you, you tend to overthink stuff. And that's not me being mean to Larry. Please don't think
of
that way. The only way this stuff ever succeeds is if we do simplify it. And it has to be messaged in such a way that people not only understand it, but they want it. And things like renewable energy is probably one of the simplest things to argue to people. Wouldn't you like to never have another power bill?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I have to throw something in, Larry. I will take 1,000 overthinkers from the 300 million underthinkers.
Oh, amen, Carol.
So, I'm. Let's not diminish that.
No, absolutely not. And let's not.
That good quality you have, Larry.
Yeah, it is.
You know, because Bob, I've spent years trying to read things and trying to weigh various theoretical points of view and trying to argue. And in my own head, and this is driving me up a wall now. I just think I'd like to have something simple.
Well, okay, here's something simple then. And I echo everything that Carol just said, Larry. We value you, and we respect you. And I didn't mean it as a critique. But if you want, if you want something that you can push for that just makes sense, one, understand that the apocarev is not coming anytime soon. You know, the apocalyptic revolution, and whatever. Empires trundle along for a very long time, but barring some sort of monumental natural disaster. But secondly, if you want something that you can wrap your head around fairly easily, what I mentioned a little bit earlier, the feed-in tariff.
Yes.
Is the linchpin to the success of a renewable energy revolution in this country. Because a feed-in tariff makes it not only possible but economically viable for people to move to renewable energy. You know, I can look at people here in West Virginia and I can say, wouldn't you like to be free of Appalachian power? And I don't just get yes. And I don't get yeah. I get, oh, my God, hell, yes, I would. I hate those bastards. And it's because of a century of abuse. It's because
the thing is, it needs to be sold not because you're not going to eliminate your tie to the power grid. It's your electric bill will be 50% if you put this on the roof.
Yeah. Or the fact that but a feed-in tariff allows you to become a net producer, not a net consumer of energy.
Well, but the fact is, on a normal sized house, if you put the solar panels up, you are not going to produce a sufficient amount of electricity to totally eliminate the power tie.
Okay. I gotcha, Roger. Okay.
You're going to stomp it down by a tremendous amount, but your inner tie, when you have solar on the roof and you're generating, you got to have a unit that hangs on the side of your house that matches the sine wave and all the rest of that. And Spark, you can talk about it more than I can, that feeds back into the system. But the fact is, an average size house does not have enough square footage to totally supply your house with power. What you're going to do is cut down tremendously, anywhere from 20 to 70% of what you're sucking out of the utility.
Yeah, and the beauty remains that you are producing your own energy, so you are getting more. I mean, there's a freedom argument to be made, Roger.
Oh, I'm not arguing the freedom argument, but for people to think they can put a bunch of panels on their roof when the sun goes down, unless you have the battery backup, you're not going to have any electricity when the sun goes down. So you need that inner tie, but you can push a tremendous amount of electricity into the system between noon and 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, which is the heaviest demand time on the grid with the air conditioning and all the rest of that crap. And if we did the roads, rooftops, barn tops, whatever, we don't need to build new coal-fired power plants. We don't need to build nuclear power plants. We don't need to do all that. You got to look at Germany. They went into a solar program, and they got such a great buy-in to it that they have excess electrical generation during the demand time, noon to 6 o'clock at night, that all of a sudden they got too much electricity. They don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, yeah. And we got to get out of here. But I think the takeaway on all of this is that the key to it all is that we as the people have to demand it. We have to have a government that responds to our demand. And we have to and then we have to have action taken upon those demands. Ultimately, whatever social change we want in this country, sooner or later is going to involve writing and passing a law. And we need that. And the other side is working hand over fist to create the laws, as noted in an email, to create the laws to keep that from happening. And I'm not saying they don't exist, but where are the organizations that are working in the other direction? And my last caveat would be, it all has to come from the grassroots. And with that, I will thank you all very kindly. Thank you to Carol and Todd and Kath and Steve and Devin. Thank you, Ron, even though we didn't get to hear from you. Thank you, Psychoticus. You jumped in late, but it's good to see you. Thanks, Roger, for some great topics. Thanks, Betsy, for an absolutely rare live appearance on Friday on the Front Porch. Thank you, Waggy. Thank you, Sergi. And thank you very kindly, Sparky, for your long, long, long moderation of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. It will continue at 5 minutes past midnight Eastern time for those of you who want to jump in later after Malloy. And thanks very much for all of you who answered Tom's Ozone Challenge and Lauren's Attention Craving Challenge. Thank you. we've got a lot better shot at finishing off this fundraising drive now than we did at the beginning of the program, and that is the absolute truth. Everybody, have a great weekend. Talk to you Monday, more in Monday. And, yeah, let's go Mountaineers. Gina, it's all for you.